Hi, this is the Joyfully Prepared podcast, and I am your host, Wendy Bergen. And today I have a special guest, and I'm so excited to introduce her to you. Her name is Leanne Linsky, and she is a comedian turned entrepreneur, and she's the founder and CEO of the new online comedy club called Plausible. And I was so excited to learn of Leanne because I love to laugh, and she's just perfect. So Leanne, thank you for being on the podcast, and please tell us all about you.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Yes. So all about me is I actually grew up in a very funny family. My parents and two older brothers are hilarious. They're very quick-witted. So it was kind of a must-have characteristic in order to exist. So I learned from them. And as I got older, I ended up going to school. I didn't know I'd do comedy. I just thought it was a necessity. It's a great thing to have in your back pocket, right? Mm-hmm. And I went to school for business, and I ended up working for right out of school, I was a bookkeeper. And then I went to work for a Fortune 500 for nearly 13 years. And during that time, I did a lot of public speaking and talking in front of people. And I thought, I'm going to go and take a writing class, a comedy writing class, because I think that'll help me. Okay. And I loved it. And then some of my coworkers were like, you should really consider taking some improv classes in the second city, which I grew up in the Chicago area. Uh-huh. But at the time that I went to college, I went to University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I stayed there. So that's where I ended up with this job. But at the time, the second city actually had a training center in Las Vegas. And so like all of a sudden, one person suggested it. And all of a sudden, I saw the second city ads everywhere. It was really weird. I'm like, okay, it must be a thing. So yeah. That I must do. So I went and I took a class. I came out of there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I should take all the classes. And so I took all their classes, and some of them two and three times, you know, wow. for a number of years. And I just pursued it in my evenings and weekends, and I absolutely loved it. So yeah, I took my first comedy writing class in 2001. And then eventually this job that I had that I loved, I was laid off. And my friend that I had met, so during the time that I was taking all these classes, sometimes I'd travel on vacation, go to New York and take classes. Sometimes I'd go to LA on the weekends and take classes. Wow. Mm-hmm. So I met all these other people. So when I got laid off, one of my friends from the theater in New York said, hey, I'm moving to New York, because he was from another state. And he goes, and I got a sublet. Do you want to go? And I was like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. He goes, well, you said that if you didn't have that job you loved, you would go. Right. And I was like, oh, no. Someone's calling my bluff, you
Dang
know?
It.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So I walked around for an hour. I said, I'll think about it. And he was like, well, you have 1 hour. And I was like, well, getting a place in New York is very hard. So you can't think too long on it or the places. Right. So I learned that lesson. And an hour later I said, sure, I'm in. So after that, I packed up two suitcases, moved to New York City.
Wow.
And I just fully immersed myself into the comedy scene, mm-hmm. you know, because I had been working for that big corporation for nearly 13 years. I thought I would be there forever. So I didn't really have a plan. I just showed up, and I signed up for a bunch of classes, started, you know, hanging out with everybody that I met and in comedy, and started my own open mic. I ended up running an open mic in New York for about 7.5 years. I produced shows. I wrote and produced my one woman show.
Wow.
That I did, and did commercials. I did theater, did all the things. Right. Mm-hmm. And then eventually after about 9 years, I moved to the West Coast. I moved to the LA area, mm-hmm. and suddenly found myself spending all this time in traffic rather than on stage. I'm like, this is silly. Why am I doing this?
Right. Like,
and how do I bridge that gap? And so I started doing things online. So this was before COVID. Mm-hmm. Some people were like, why would I ever do that? And other comedians were like, this is great. I can connect with people from coast to coast. So if I want to travel and book shows, I now have new connections.
Oh.
So it, and then COVID happened, mm-hmm. and then everybody went online. And then although everything online is great and got us through a pandemic, what we need as performers is much different You know, so, and I can get into a little bit of that, but I eventually, thought, how can I make this better and get, fulfill our needs as comedians and have interaction? Cause on social feeds, it's very passive. You know, we watch things passively and we don't have to have any human interaction. Mm-hmm. And with comedy, it's vital to me to see and hear or one or the other and get a, like, am I funny? You know? Rather than waiting for likes to roll in, like, that's not fun. So yeah. And also, how do we make money as performers? Cause that's another big challenge. Contrary to popular belief, comedians don't always get paid, and very rarely, unless you're well known or headlining or something like that. So it's a lot of paying your dues. Like, we pay to play. So anyway, I ended up, deciding that I wanted to pursue this and figure this out. How do I scale it? How do I build a business? So I went back to school at the age of 50, got my master's degree in innovation and entrepreneurship, and then immersed myself in that ecosystem and meeting other like-minded individuals, people who are really pursuing big dreams and doing things. And I'm a non-technical founder, right? Like, I'm not a coder. But I know what I want. So how do I build that team? So I went through the process so that I could hire a team of people and to build my vision and bring it to life. And that's what happened. And so now we have hundreds of comedians on there and even more fans on there being able to laugh in real time. And I think, you know, my overall mission with it is, how do we bring more people together to share laughter, you know, internationally, across the states, all the things. Do something that brings people together on a bigger level.
Well, I love that. I love that as your dream, and that the dream is coming true. And what did you say about laughter? You want to bring the world together with laughter? No, you said it better than that.
So our mission is to bring people together with shared laughter.
Yeah. Why is laughing so important?
Well, for me, especially, laughing is very therapeutic. It's very cathartic. I think it's a very necessary part of our life. There's been studies done, like, if people who are in pain and they're playing and they're having fun, they feel less pain than people who don't engage in those activities of play or having fun or laughing. It's just a really healthy coping mechanism. And it's no surprise, like, people are like, oh, comedy, it's very niche. And I'm like, is it though? Because when I look at live streaming statistics, live streaming is growing exponentially, first of all, but comedy is the second most popular genre of live stream, only second to breaking news.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So what does that tell you? I get my news, I need a laugh. Like, I need relief. I need, you know, you know, it's like music. I think, I don't know, I've only met one person who ever's like, I don't like music. I'm like, what? I don't even want to know anything else about you. But like, it, you know, like people, like, who doesn't like music or laughter? It's kind of unusual to find somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, I think, something most people seek out at some point during their day.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're talking about just how cathartic it is and how, and really universal, and how every culture is so different. I lived in Finland for a little while. Their humor, it's almost undetectable. Like, it's so dry, and it's just, and you have, and if you don't know the language well, which, you know, I struggled with at times, but you're like, oh, okay. And I remember the first time I ever got one of their jokes, and I was like, that was so subtle that nobody really laughed, but it was just okay, good for you. Kudos. You know, it was more of that kind of a, all right, versus like this big loud laugh.
Yeah.
So every culture is going to be different in the way they give. Exactly. Yeah. So you and I were talking just before we started recording, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about being able to reframe past events with humor and gratitude. So my example, for whatever reason, we may have something bad happen to us, or it's labeled as bad. A house burns down. That's definitely not anything one would expect. Mm-hmm. And so we label it as bad, like I lost all my stuff. But how I feel like happiness and joy and is developed by being able to reframe these things that are labeled bad into things that can be blessings. And I'd like for you to talk about that a little bit more as well.
Yeah. I think so this is such an important topic. Comedy is laughing at things. First of all, we have like a natural instinct to laugh at certain things, even mm-hmm. when we're in a very uncomfortable situation mm-hmm. or maybe what someone might deem inappropriate. Right. But it's definitely a coping mechanism, mm-hmm. you know, similar to crying, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes there's laughter when we're scared. People get, they get a nervous laughter when they're in fear of something, mm-hmm. and it's a natural reaction that mm-hmm. our bodies have. So there is that. In comedy, we learn that tragedy plus time equals comedy. Mm. That's okay. Why even like your example of a house burning down.
Right.
Let's say if your house burned down today mm. and I made a joke, people might go, "Ooh, too soon."
Right. Right.
I mean, not enough time in there. You know, you hear comedians often say, "Oh, too soon," you know. But maybe you make a joke about it, and you're coming from first person. It's mm-hmm. your experience. You have a bit more permission to laugh about it at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's coming from your own first person experience. But I think that, like, I'll give you a couple examples. I've had like I got laid off from a job, right? Mm-hmm. I found humor in that. I still continued to go in every day because I didn't know what else to do. You know, they're like, you don't have to come in every day. We're giving you a time frame before your last day, but you don't have to come in every day. I proceeded to go in every day. And that was kind of laughable. But other instances, like I've been through a divorce. Divorce mm-hmm. is extremely painful mm-hmm. process and very hard. And in that process, I'll use this as a key example, because this is where comedy really started. I really started paying attention to it and making jokes. Mm-hmm. When people would approach me, they were like, "Oh my gosh, Leanne, I heard what happened. I heard you're getting a divorce. What happened?" Okay. Well, that's a big question to somebody. Like, I may not know you. We're just meeting up at the water cooler at work and you're a coworker. Like, what business of it is yours?
Right.
But if I respond with that, then they're like, "Ooh, don't talk to Leanne. You know, something's wrong with her today. She's going through a divorce." And then you get talked to later. And that's happened, right? Mm-hmm. But what I learned is if I had something in my back pocket, like, you know, I'm just using that as like a metaphor, but like something that I could say as a response, because I know if one person asks, probably 10 people are going to ask me in the next couple of months, "Oh, I heard divorce, what happened?" You know, and so I experimented with different things, like you know, like, well, it was meant to be and it was meant to be over. Not really funny, right? But then I could respond with, well, I could make fun of me, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I could do a Scooby-Doo mask. "Well, he finally figured out I wasn't the person he thought he was," or, you know. But what happens is it could be silly. It doesn't have to be like the best written joke or something.
Right.
But what I do is I take the pressure off, right? Because mm-hmm. that's a loaded question that comes in and there's immediate tension because that's a heavy topic. Mm-hmm. But what I'm doing is I'm releasing the tension by giving a response that no one's expecting. Mm. And it kind of takes people by surprise. There's an element of surprise. Mm-hmm. And then it also gives me permission to so suddenly it's reframed the whole concept in their mind, like, "Oh, she's not going to cry. She's not going to give me the dish, tea on it." Maybe. And then they come back and they're like, "Oh, well, I'm glad you're doing okay." Or, you know, it tips it in my favor, or I can direct and, and be like, anyway, hey, are you going to, you know, the holiday party this week or whatever? Right. And I can redirect, but it doesn't shut someone down and say, hey, don't ask me. It's none of your business, or I'd rather not talk about it. Yeah. It lightens the mood. They've asked, because sometimes people just do it because they think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it just relieves the pressure. And then I don't walk away feeling like my boss is going to come talk to me like, hey, you're going through this thing. I know, but you can't talk to people like this. So, talking from experience, right? So, yeah. So those things do happen, you know, and then when I went through my second divorce. Guess what? I've got more material. It's like, oh, hey, I'm two for, you know, oh for two or whatever. I'm working on number three. You know, it's a trend. I'm almost to a trend. I'm one off from a trend.
Right.
A hat trick. Right? It's like being married and divorced. That's what I did in the 90s. So like, I could, you know, tell you a lot of things. It's like,
right. And
another example is when I moved from New York to LA, right? People are, I do comedy and theater and whatnot. And they're like, oh, Leanne, so you moved to LA for your comedy. And I'm like, well, I guess you could say that. I moved there for a man and that turned out to be a joke. So all true, right?
Right.
For all the wrong reasons, giant failure. You know, I moved 3,000 miles and 7 weeks later, someone's like, I changed my mind. I'm like, what? Devastating.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And so what I do, I got a lot of new jokes out of it. I'm like, how do I, at the time, you know, it came slowly, but over time,
of course,
I could build it. But yeah, there is, I also believe, sorry, and this is a really long answer to your question.
You're fine.
Writing jokes is a, I call it a science. I don't know that scientists probably disagree with me, but I find it a fascinating process, because going with my first thought of a joke, okay, maybe, probably not funny, but then going, how can I shift my perspective? Does shifting my perspective on something give me a funnier punchline? Does giving me a different outlook or a mindset on something, maybe someone else's point of view, whatever it is, give me a better punchline? And that, like, I wrote my one woman show and it was on marriage and divorce and family and all these things, but writing it and playing characters and telling the story from someone else's point of view cracks things wide open, and it's fun and it's funny. And it's, that's the other thing, is laughing with something rather than at something. And I'm a big advocate for laughing with people rather than laughing at people.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Going with that, you know, you moved from New York to LA, you were obviously disappointed, unmet expectations, you know, all that kind of, what, talk just a little bit too, because there are some of us, I will put myself in that group, some of us who don't really want to interact with those negative feelings of sadness, anger, depression, different things like that. And we see that in the kind of the comedy world with these really well-known comedians, and they live with a kind of a sense of depression that nobody knows, because everybody's expecting them to be funny whenever they come on TV, and they're unwilling to sit with, I'm not a comedian as, you know, like as a career or anything, but I don't really enjoy sad things ever. And so I tend to make joy ever. I don't like pain. And so I tend to make jokes to get out of it. And as I've started to mature, I have realized I do need to sit with some of those sad things and process through that versus just making the joke and moving on and masking the pain. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Great question. So a lot of comedians suffer from a lot of those, you know, are challenged with depression and anxiety and different, a wide variety of things. I think that, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity, like running a mic for over 7 years in New York City. You know, people get up, and open mics are an opportunity for us to process our ideas and things that were still working out. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I still love open mics and that process, because sometimes we just need to put it out there and float things out there. And we typically write about what we know,
mm-hmm.
right? So just because when we're performing and we're laughing about these things, the truth is, as we've lived and we felt that pain in order to talk about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not necessarily bypassing all of that and just being funny.
Right.
I think there's tragedy plus time.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, there's a process and how right. we feel it and how we go through it. In fact, a comedian came to an open mic last night and he was like, I typically don't ever write anything when things are good, but fortunately I just went through a breakup. So now I've got some new stuff. But it's true, because our comedy does, honestly, most of the really funny stuff comes from a painful place. And that's right. something that's very relatable to all
mm-hmm.
of us.
Mm-hmm.
And acknowledging that there's a vulnerability in that. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if you were to watch a lot of different comedians talking about maybe that same topic, people who come from the first person experience of it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I find to be a lot funnier than maybe people who talk from a third person, you know, like at it.
Right.
And but there's also a thing of someone can talk about it because they've dated or were a family member or something, and they can share about their experience on the right. outside without laughing at the person, but mm-hmm. their experience and how they messed up and played a role in all of it. And
right.
so I don't know that I think at first glance, it can appear that we're just solely going it for the funny, mm-hmm. but the truth of the matter of, like, Robin Williams is a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, here he was, had depression and had all of these things he was fighting with. You know, I think that's for a lot of the very funny comedians out there, and they view the world differently, they show up differently, and mm-hmm. they have this incredible talent that, and sometimes the talent is the only thing we see because we don't see them on an everyday basis.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So what I've heard you say in this last little bit, as far as having I'm just going to call it a quote unquote bad thing happen in our lives. We comedians are not, or comedy is not saying, oh, that's really funny that your house burnt down. We're not saying it like that. But what you're saying is that I like the way you define time plus tragedy. Is that what you said? Equals comedy, the time part. And everybody processes through the time, the tragedy. It takes, everybody can process through it differently. But what I liked hearing what you said too was, you can come at these experiences from a different point of view. I watched a TED talk. I'll put it in my show notes if I can remember it. But the man giving the talk talked about his dad, who had lost like three of his fingers or his hand, I don't remember. As a little boy, he had picked up a little hatchet that the dad and the brother, older brothers, and he wanted to do it too. And he ended up chopping off his hand. And there's a whole story, but when the little boy got home from the hospital and everything, the mom said, "Tell me what happened." And he was kind of embarrassed and it was painful. And every day the mom would ask him, "Tell me what happened. But now tell me, what if I was a little bird and was watching you do this? What happened?" And what she taught the son, this other man's father, she taught him to tell the story, to make it just part of his life. It was nothing to be ashamed of. He could reframe it, and she taught him how to reframe it and to come at it from different points of view. And that's what I hear you saying too, is to develop that muscle to come at, I'll just use the word tragedy because we all define that differently, but hard things, we can come at it from different points of view and create the story that we want to carry with us into the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the example that you just shared. And I think that's a really important thing. So for instance, when I was doing part of the writing process for my one woman show, I actually had taken a class, but a really wonderful class on writing your solo show. And the instructor had given us these different exercises to do. And this parallels with what you're talking about. Come up with a topic, and then we would present the topic as ourselves, right? And, and our a character, ourselves as a character. And then she'd be like, great, tell that same story as, let's, in my instance, as your ex-husband. Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, suddenly I have to defend his reasoning.
Yeah.
His thought process. And that's hilarious because I have to be truthful. I'm not making fun of him.
Right.
It's now comical because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is how he really sees it. And he sees me like this. And now I'm making fun of me. It's me making fun of me and realizing this whole different point of view.
Right.
Also heard, sticking with your example, that I've heard from a friend I had a long time ago, had gone through a very traumatic experience and had a wonderful therapist at the time who said, I need you to practice telling your story and get to a place that you can tell your story without crying.
Right.
And this is really important because I think the more we talk about it, and this goes to the process of writing a joke. Initially, when I write something down, may not be funny. It just may sound super sad. Right.
Right.
And as I keep telling it and I get more confident and comfortable with saying the words out loud of what happened. I can now detach my emotion from the words and I can rearrange my words. And that's where I think for me, I might do a mental dump and dump my heart out onto a piece of paper, right? And tell a story. Now I go through and I'm like, where can I pull the threads of gold from this that could actually be funny? Like, what is a different point of view? How can I wordplay and play with this and tell it in a different way? And how does that change it? And I think for me, like I was telling when I wrote my one woman show, it was really hard at first. I was still, you know, it was still pretty fresh in my mind of what had happened, even though it had been, you know, a period of years. But now I was like reliving it all to write it. And then I went through and now I'm telling it as different characters and different people in my life, changes my perspective. By the time I get done with that show, I'm like, I'm so sick of hearing about that part of my life. You know, like, I'm so over it. Like, let's go.
Wow.
So it changed the whole thing for me. And I really got new perspective. I looked at it differently and how it also played an integral role of like how I was showing up in relationships and things. So to your point, to have someone have that traumatic experience and to be able to tell people and be able to detach from the emotion of it and be able to just share the story and take the tension off and also give a different point of view. I think it's just brilliant.
Yeah. And something that I've become acquainted with recently from someone, we have to know what the truth is, because until we know what the truth is, we really can't start to progress. And one of the things that I'm learning, thankfully, because I've had lots of experiences with maybe not so good things, but I noticed that in society, and everybody does it, there's nobody who doesn't do it, but we tend to make decisions to stay out of pain versus making decisions to feel joy. And so if you think about that, it really is true, because we're all in some sort of pain with whatever, with a child that didn't do what was expected of them, with a job, with their own body, whatever it is. But if we acknowledge it and find the truth in it and even are accountable for our part in it, like what you were saying as you were writing all these different perspectives, what you found was all this little bits of truth. And then you were able to turn it into comedy. Not that everybody wants to do that, but you were able to accept it. And man, you're healed and you've moved on from it. But being able to acknowledge it, be accountable for it, and then make a choice not to perpetuate the pain. Often we are feeling pain, and then we go, I like to eat brownies. That's how I perpetuate the pain, right? But we do things like that to cope with whatever the pain is versus going, hey, lady, how about not eat the brownies and let's go write in our journal or whatever, different things like that to find out what really is going on in there. And then we can find where the joy is because we've acknowledged what is truly bothering us.
Yeah. Yeah. It really takes a lot of awareness, mm-hmm. right? And joke writing, people, you notice there's a lot of observational comedy and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, it does change how we think. We work out different muscles in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the gym to work out and physically improve our body, right? But what about those brain parts? Like, we have to work out different muscles in our brain if we want to start thinking different. Like, we just can't wake up one day and be like, I'm going to start focusing on the funny. The key to what you're saying is like, it takes practice, mm-hmm. right? It takes just like anything else we do. The first time mm-hmm. we sit down and play an instrument, it's probably mm-hmm. terrible, you know, mm-hmm. unless we're some sort of prodigy or something, but not me. You know, I, even now, all this time I've had over 20 some years, I've been writing jokes and sketches and whatnot. They're not always funny, but it takes practice. Mm-hmm. Then we learn the rules to it. We learn, oh, that worked, that didn't work. So it's the same thing. It's like, how do I, you know, oh my gosh, I love brownies. I just binged the whole thing of them the other day, right? And then why did I do that? So what am I thinking? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I were a brownie and saw me coming, what would be going through my mind right now? Like, you know, like, holy crap, here she comes. Like, I'm still warm. Like, I have not even cooked yet. And this woman is coming after me. Like, yeah. And then I'm like, oh, I've become that girl. Like, flip that. Right. And then you can make it, like, compare that to a relationship, like to a guy who just stepped off the train into your city. You're like, whoa, here she comes. I'm not even on the train. Red flag, red flag, red flag. It's not a propane, you know?
Right.
So, like, I love comparing things. So something mm-hmm. as simple as, like, you know, the brownies, like, how does mm-hmm. that compare to dating or something like that? Right. Because then it changes the perspective a bit.
Right.
Then, like, I challenged myself one day to write a joke about shoes and relationships. Two things I wouldn't normally compare. And so I wrote for like, I don't know, a couple hours sitting at a cafe or something in my notebook, like 5 or 6 pages. And I came up with a joke. Flip-flops are what I consider to be the booty call of shoes. They're easy, they're convenient, but they're never there for you in the long run. So, you know, it's like, so you can take things that aren't related.
Yeah.
It takes the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
We've all been in hurtful relationships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now we've compared it to a shoe.
Right. Right. A flip-flop of all things, right?
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, okay. So the same thing could be done for other things that we find painful. Like, you know, how can I relate, you know, marriage to fishing or dating to fishing or, mm-hmm. you know, a car or buying shoes to eating brownies.
Right. Right.
You know,
I love is that most of the people that are listening through my podcast probably are not going to pursue a life of comedy. However, comedy and laughter should be a part of our lives. And so I love that you're teaching us all how to think a little bit more like that. And I want to talk about your website, plausible.com. And that information will be in the show notes. Tell us a little bit about it and why it can benefit our lives.
Okay. So there's so many reasons. To your point, not everybody wants to be a comedian, you know, will be. But at some point we need that laughter release. Mm-hmm. and plausible is an opportunity for those who want to pursue comedy, create a comedian account. And within a comedian account, it's free. You get all the scheduling tools, you get the virtual stage, you get feedback from audience members, you get all of the things without even having to leave your house. And awesome. You get all of the interaction in real time. It's not all pre-recorded like we have on social media. So everything, all the shows and the show listings are live. They're in real time. Like if it says it's 4 o'clock your time, then at 4 o'clock you log in as a comedy fan and you join the show like you would another, like a Zoom room or a Google Meets, like something that few people are familiar with. But we use our own technology. So the comedian is always larger than everybody else in the room, because if you were to go to a club, they would be on stage, right? Wouldn't be looking at everyone equally, because then I'm looking at what everybody has in their house. It's weird, right? So let's be honest. But they're anchored and much bigger than everybody else in the room. And then you can see the rest of the audience and hear them laugh without any audio cutouts or delays. So like you're in a club, and if you want to look and scan through the room, you just scroll up and down with your audience and they scroll through, but the comedian always stays dominant.
That's cool.
So it's really fun, and you have access to all the comedians, and you can sort through the comedians by your own comedy preferences. They, if they set up their profiles fully, then they'll check like what topics they usually talk about, like relationships or politics or religion, or maybe it's observational, or maybe it's slapstick or wordplay, you know, puns, things like that. They can pick anything. If you're like, I don't want to hear about any of these things, I only want to hear these things, you can kind of sort through and see who you want. And we're still working on those algorithms as as we grow, because we're still new. But that's the whole idea, so that you can kind of get the comedy that you like versus just the random, let me doom scroll and see what pops up, you know? And so as a comedy fan, you can log in, create your free account, look at the talent directory. Like I said, we have hundreds of comedians in there from all over the world. And then you can look through the show schedule, and, you know, there's always open mics. Comedians love open mics. And the benefit to that, even if you're a fan, you can still attend an open mic and you'll more than likely be able to get a couple minutes if you wanted to try your hand
at
comedy. But even if you just sat in there and laughed and listened in, you can hear some of the mics are peer-to-peer feedback, where maybe the comedians hash things out and talk about how you can improve your joke.
That's cool.
And do stuff. So you can get to see behind the scenes and like how the jokes are made.
Oh, I love that. That is really, that's really cool. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. And there's also an opportunity, you know, right now, like all the accounts and everything are free. We're in our beta testing. There's free shows, free mics, all that. And on occasion, comedians can charge if they elect to do a ticketed show, like if it's a bigger name comedian, or there maybe we've had people who are doing fundraisers for nonprofits. They'll charge a ticket price, and then the proceeds will go to the nonprofit. So they are doing things like that. And it gives comedians an opportunity to earn money, which they don't often do, but also to get out there and practice, because even though a lot of people have chosen this as their career, it's so vital to work those muscles and to get as much stage time as possible and get your jokes out there to see what's working and what's not.
That I love that. I think I found a new pastime.
Yay! We'd love to have you.
I know, right? Well, we'll see. But I think it's fantastic that you've taken, I mean, what you've really done is you took a bookie accounting career, and you went into your comedy that was natural, kind of bred in your family. And then you went back to school and you're smushing all this stuff together in order to make a platform where there can be more laughter in the world. And I just, I applaud you. You're plausible.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. I applaud plausible.
It's been quite a journey. And, you know, just circling back on your thing, it's, I hope you can't hear the sirens outside, but there are so many failures in the journey. It's inevitable. And if I'm not failing, I'm not trying hard enough.
That's right.
And the thing isn't how many times you failed, it's how many times you get back up.
Right. And learn from the failure, right? Tweak that, make it funny, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where all my material comes from.
Mine too.
Right? I mean, it's a gift. It is a gift.
It is. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. And I know that our listeners are going to want to know more about where they can find you. So can you tell us where they can find you? And all the information will be in the show notes as well.
Yeah, you can find me at plausible.com. That's with two Z's. Okay. And our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook is all at plausible.
Okay.
So use those handles everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah. And like I said, everything will be in the show notes so people can go click on that as well. And hopefully I'm going to join the platform. I don't know what I'll be, a fan at first, maybe a comedian. I don't know. You just never know.
That's right. You don't.
I got a lot of material with my life.
Hey, you have kids. You have a husband. You
exactly.
You have material.
Exactly. I got a lot of stuff. Anyway, just me getting into things, right? Well, thank you again. It was a delight to speak with you. I love your perspective. I loved what I learned and what our listeners are going to learn as well. So thank you again for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
Thank you so much for listening to Joyfully Prepared. I'm grateful for you and appreciate you inviting me into your life. Please subscribe and tell all your friends about this delightful podcast. Leaving a joyful review would earn you all sorts of karma points too. I invite you to join my free Facebook group at www.joyfulprepgroup.com and join with other like-minded mothers.